following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee.
Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. Greetings, salutations, hello, how's it going? Welcome to another episode from Radioland from the home office in Memphis, Tennessee. Thank you for doing what it is that you do to get this program delivered to you, whether it's download, stream, however. It's all the same. It's all the same, man. I tell you, when this show gets released, because this show gets released usually on Sunday, sometime between, like, I don't know, 4 and 6 o'clock somewhere central time. It's a fairly, you know, it's about the most stable thing we've got going, quite frankly. And this episode is being released at a kind of an unusual time too. I am, as we speak, if you're listening to it, the moment it came out, it's going to be kind of a weird mind thing. What are you talking about? It's not live. I've actually had that question before. No, it's not. It's pre-recorded. It's pre-recorded for your own safety. It's almost live. I do a live show, 5 days and one night a week. So 6 times a week, I'm on the air live. At radio-memphis.com, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., Sundays, 8 p.m. to 11. Where was I? I'm on the freeway right now. Well, right now I'm sitting in Studio A. But when you get this, I'll actually be on the freeway, and I may even record something while I got the recorder with me. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. So there's that. I'm out on the road. I went to Texas. And down into the Austin area, and then I'll be driving back, and it's just some stuff. I don't know. So I'll have the recorder with me, and it's a long ass drive. I'll be bored, and I'll need to talk to some inanimate piece of plastic and make something happen. So there's that. This week I got into some Facebook type scenario. As happens, Facebook is it's a strange place. You've heard me criticize it before, and it's odd. I made a joke, as you do in social media, at least when you're in my position, a little one line throwaway joke. It was silly at best. It wasn't even that funny, and I just did it. And boy, howdy, it sparked a kind of a shitstorm. So much so that I wound up deleting the post. And I'm not going to repeat it here, because if it generated that kind of vitriol in social media, there's no telling what it will do in this. Oh, I can't believe you said that. You know, it was that kind of thing. And it's like, come on, it was a joke. And it was most people got it for what it was and understood it for what it was. And that's fantastic. It's a beautiful thing. What the few that didn't get, they didn't understand, went completely ape over this whole thing. They lost their minds. I was called every name in the book by at least 2 people. I can't believe you said that. That's disgusting. And it wasn't disgusting. It was... I don't know, 10 or 11 people that unfriended me, which was, I don't care. And what was really, well, there's a couple of things that were amusing about it. I actually got a death threat. That was kind of cool. Maybe I will tell you what it was I wrote. I don't know. Maybe not. I'll leave you in suspense. And it had to do with somebody who had recently passed away. And he was well known. And it was too soon, bro. It's one of those things. And I wound up deleting the post because, okay, it's all well and good. And it's funny. You can be angry. You can be pissy. You can do whatever you want. It's social media. I said what I said. You have the same right to say what you say. Go knock yourselves out. But about the time when things turn, you know, quasi-violent, that's when it's time to say, I think it's time for me to just go ahead and turn this off now and go away. Now, the other really highly amusing thing about this was that not 10 minutes after I deleted the post. And of course, when you delete a post and on Facebook, everything goes away. It's gone. Boom. There you go. Later. It doesn't exist anywhere. Everybody forgets about it, and it's gone. And let me tell you about forgetting about it. Because one of the people that had a little bit of vitriol against me had found the post that was at that time directly below it in the chronological order it was, and loved it and made a comment about it and had some fun with it. And it was like, wow, you went from I hate your guts, I want you to die a horrible, slow, painful death to, wow, that was a really funny bit. The hell? I don't understand. I think my theory is on this is that when you're dealing with social media, everybody has gigantic testicles of steel. When they've got a keyboard, the keyboard cowboys, as I've called them, they got big balls. They're going to say, oh, you're just a horrible human being, blah 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 blah. And then you go and you see that person in public somewhere, and they're like your best friend. They don't take to that confrontation very well. And be that as it may, I think social media has come up with a dual personality in people. It's created this kind of this strange, surreal thing. So the person that you're dealing with in social media, you're interacting with, is not really the person you think it is. I mean, it's the same human being by and large. It may be a bot, but it's the same human being. And you are, you know, that's why I'm the way I am in social media is the way I am here. I just don't give a shit. I don't care. And people find that to be, I don't know, disturbing, I guess is a good way to be about it. Because when it's like, oh my God, you say something that's out there, it's a little crazy, it's different, it's, you know, it's a little upsetting perhaps. They find themselves in this strange position where they don't quite know exactly how to take it. And when they don't know how to take it, their immediate response is to come at you with guns blazing because they're scared. And that's what it is. We trigger in ourselves our own flight or fight response. And you see both of that in especially in Facebook. If you say something that's remotely unsavory, if they choose either fight or flight, they will act upon that thing. So like for example, if they choose to fly away, then what they will do is unfriend you, unfollow you, block you, ban you, whatever the case may be. And if they choose to fight, then they pick up the keyboard and they get to pecking. And they're just, oh, you're a horrible person, blah, 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 blah. This is why you're so wrong. It's Jesus and guns, man, you know, because Jesus carried machine guns. And it wasn't that kind of a post. Well, partly. It didn't have anything to do with guns. But when you make a religious statement that is sort of cute and funny and somebody gets rubbed the wrong way, everybody that supports that wrong idea then feels that they've been vindicated and they're like, oh, let's go after the evil radio guy because he made a funny or not so funny joke. And meanwhile, the other people are like, calm your tits, man. It was a joke. It was something about Billy Graham coming back in 3 days. That's what it was. That's all it was. And it was a funny question. Say what you will about the man. I mean, yeah, okay, he did a lot, but he was very well known, and he was clearly very much loved by people. But at the same time, he was like any other man. He had his fallacies. He had his problems, and I was sort of poking fun at that. I personally was not a big fan of what the man did. I think he opened up the door for a lot of the televangelists that are out there that had caused these problems that we see, you know, the Joel Osteens, the Hagees, the Tiltons, all those. It's not what he was. He didn't do that. He was America's preacher. He also urged Richard Nixon to use nuclear weapons on the North Vietnamese. And he also urged him to bomb the dikes that were holding back the water to protect the floodlands and wipe out all these people, resulting into a sure victory by killing innocent civilians and children. yeah, he, and it's on the Nixon tapes. I know a lot of people, that's not true. He didn't say that. Well, yeah, he kind of did. But you're also dealing with a quasi-religious figure. You wait for this stuff to blow over, you see. In about, a, I don't know, 6 months' time, you could probably get away with that joke. Was I wrong? No. Was my timing off? Maybe. Was the joke funny? Kind of, but not. Was it worth getting worked up over? Absolutely not. It's dismissed for what it for what it is, you know. It was I don't know an interesting experiment for sure, because watching this completely unfold into the freak out that that had happened is remarkable, I guess is a good way to put it. It was really quite fascinating to see how people just lose their shit over little things. And I shouldn't be surprised by this, and I'm not really, but because you see it all the time in other posts and other things that happen out there. And when it does, then you get a little worked up, you get a little nervous, and then you just move along. It's all you, nothing to see here. It is time for all of us to just move along. Much like this program, because it's kind of where we're at here. Action-packed show full of thrills and spills, and you'll be on the edge of your seat listening to this. No, you won't. I don't know. You might. There is a really we're shifting gears. Coming up, I've got music for you from the RVs. Ooh, yeah, Billy Gibson and the RVs. I got a great tune for you that's coming up. From the This Is It record, I think is what it's called. Anyway, we'll get to that a little bit later on. I have a conversation that was had with Mr. John Brewer. There is a really fantastic documentary. It's available on Amazon Prime if you're a subscriber to that. If you like the documentaries, especially if you like music documentaries, this is it, and it's history, and it's really, really well done. A gentleman by the name of John Brewer, he's from the UK. He called in. We had a chat about his production of this the show. It's called Monochrome, Black, White, and Blues. And it's a three-part documentary. Each part is an hour long. It's all available on, as I mentioned, it's all available on Amazon here in the United States. And it's just a fantastic show. And, I host a blues show on Sunday evenings. And I thought I had a pretty good working knowledge of the blues, and I suppose I do. But there were some things in here that I'd never realized and never really was able to kind of wrap my head around a little bit. And John does a great job of telling the story of a truly an American form of music and the people that are behind it. And it's great fun. It's a beautiful program, and I highly recommend it. We'll talk to John Brewer from the UK. He phoned in from over there, and we'll talk about Monochrome, Black, White, and Blues, and it's on the Amazon Prime. But we'll take a little break, and when we come back, our conversation with Mr. John Brewer right here from Radioland.
Keep calm and haunt on with Historical Haunts, Memphis Haunted Tour Company, Ancient Burial Mounds, Yellow Fever, Maritime Disasters, Victorian murders and ghost stories are all a part of the Memphis dark history. Join Historical Haunts for a spirited night out on the Haunted Memphis Bus Tour, Haunted Pub Crawl, the Woodruff Fontaine House Ghost Tour, or one of our other spooky tours and events. Check out our website for all of the exciting ghost tours and ghost haunts at historicalhauntsmemphis.com.
If you are and a lot of people here that in this area for sure, and a lot of people that listen in from all over the United States have become rather attached to the genre, and it is truly one of the most, at least in my opinion, one of the most remarkable pieces of American. It's purely American, as you know, and there's a fantastic story behind it, and you often think you know about it and know the history of it, but in fact, you may really not know the entire story, and that brings us to this. Our guest here in the Nooner, on the phone, all the way from the UK, Mr. John Brewer has joined us. Hello, John. How are you today?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Fine. Thank you so very much for taking the time to chat with us today about this fantastic documentary, Monochrome, Black, White, and Blue. I have seen it. It is. I sat there. I've been in this business so long that I thought I knew everything that there needed to be known about the history of this genre, and I could not have been
more disappointed in myself for not knowing the things that you brought up. And it was just it's a fantastic piece of work you've done, sir.
Thank you.
The history of this, you know, we talk about it here in Memphis, of course, as being the home of the blues and whatnot. But you have taken this thing so far back. We've always known that West Africa was really the genesis of this style of music and the real roots of this music. And as with the slave trade and people that had come through the Caribbean and the islands and then, of course, into the mouth of the Mississippi River there in New Orleans, where it really all came together. You must have it looks like you have spent just a remarkable amount of time putting all this together to figure it out.
Well, yeah, that's right. But, you know, this came out really of the efforts that and research work that I did around the making of B.B. King, The Life of Riley. And B.B. King was very influential on my course of action, because having done that film, which was, dare I say, very successful and also very, inspiring to me, I wanted to, because I found out so much about things that, just like you, I didn't know. And I therefore said, well, you know, we all go around here in the UK and in the US saying, oh, yeah, the blues, yeah, we know all about the blues. But we actually don't. And there are some very interesting concepts and things that have happened over years and years and years and hundreds of years that have made a complete change in the way that music has influenced people. And I believe that the blues, which is the blood of jazz, and jazz is very much American, blues, I think, certainly originated in America, but basically that since then there's been involvement with other countries and other, obviously, musicians that have flown the flag. But in America, music has influenced the black cause against the persecution that was created by white people in America for years and still is. I mean, it's not gone away. It's a lot better than it was, but it needs to be addressed. So I made this documentary series and the 90-minute film basically because I wanted to get it over that it's a current problem, and music is still pounding out there saying the same message.
That is so true. We've often seen throughout history how a lot of times certain events, whether they're political or whether they're social economic issues or whatever the problems that may be that encompass all of us, and there's these wedges that get divided amongst us as people, music somehow comes in here and it tells these stories. And, you know, in Memphis, of course, as you know, with Stax, the great history at Stax Studios, they were cranking out tunes that were signs of the times. And it's really nothing different than what had happened, you know, a couple of hundred years ago in the early days of this country. And I like how you encapsulated that and really told that story, that even, you know, just the simple act of communication was made difficult by these slave owners. And then you had these guys out there working in the fields, and they were able to communicate by use of music and musical instruments.
Yeah. Well, if you go back and know that the drum was banned in the days of slavery because it was so influential and so worrying to the white slave owner and plantation owners, because it became a language and they were frightened of a drum. I mean, when you think like that and think about it carefully, what a ridiculous situation. But that only emphasizes more, to me anyway, that how important the instruments were that created music, and how important music, whether it was just one drum beat or it was an arrangement of music. And we now have that drum beat being out there as an arrangement of music, saying the same things as so that one beat on the drum was saying. And it's a very interesting concept, because music influences all of us on a daily basis. And, you know, when you consider rap and you consider today's music and you look at it and look backwards, it all says the same thing. And it's like an announcement. That's how I see it anyway. And I see the progression of all of those hundreds of years that we've come through, that whenever I come to Memphis, and I come to Memphis quite a lot, I get that feeling that blues is so important.
It is very important, and like any other music city, you know, we have our ebbs and flows with it. You know, with music, it's a funny relationship, and it's always been that way. And nobody can really kind of put a finger on it, but you know, this is why like this radio station exists, is that people seek out this sound that comes from this area, and you know, even if it was, you know, if it, you know, part of it originated in other places, you know, Memphis has been sort of a kind of a fun melting pot, if you will, of all these different styles and things, and it brings me to one of the more remarkable parts of this documentary was the talk of, I guess, what is now Armstrong Park there in New Orleans. And you had, you know, on Sundays, you had the slaves that would go to, I guess it was Congo Park, and they would play their drums, and they would have, you know, they'd have their time there. And then a few blocks away would be an orchestra playing, and somebody basically could stand in the middle and draw the two things together and go, you know, this is important stuff. We could put strings with this and really make something special.
Yeah. Well, that still goes on today, you know. I was absolutely amazed. They still go down and drum, and people collate together and drum in the square.
Yeah.
And they do it in order to basically maintain their right to do so. And it was granted to them. And Sunday was the day off. And Sunday was when people could take their wares and the things that they'd made or whatever, and could sell them, and they could meet and they could talk, and it was like a sort of a day out. But every Sunday you heard that drumming, and it made and pounded away. And yes, you're quite right, you know, a few blocks away there was different types of music. And I don't know whether you spend any time, or I know that a lot of your listeners would spend time in New Orleans, but every time you go down there, I mean, you can't help but hear music wherever it is. And that's very important. So to the slaves that basically, and also those that had been given freedom, would congregate in the square, and they made their music, and they made their, or stated their word, and that was it. And I think that's spread all the way over the world. All of that has now spread.
Yeah, it's a good point you make, and it's a common thread, at least through the three parts of this documentary, that, you know, it's the importance of music in all of society and all of culture, and you know, where that thread really travels amongst, you know, all of us as a society, and trying to define what it means to people, of course, is kind of a slippery thing. And a lot of times when we have artists in here in the studio, a lot of musicians and older blues musicians that are down from the Delta, I'll ask them, what is the blues? What defines the blues for you? And every time I've asked that question, I've gotten a completely different answer each and every time.
Well, thank God, because the thing is that basically that's the great thing about the blues, is you can't tell me what the blues is, nor could I tell you. But I do tell you that there's an important thing, and there's an important strand that runs all the way through. It's communication. And blues isn't necessarily sad. Everybody thinks blues is very sad, but actually blues isn't sad. It was the way for them to get away from feeling sad. And it's a tribute to rejoicing. And you will ask those musicians, and I have, and some of them are still with us, and some have passed away. But the situation is, every one of them that I interviewed and got on camera will say the same thing. Blues is the blues. And you take the blues in any way that you want to take the blues, and the blues will take you any way that the blues wants to take you. It's very an extraordinary, extraordinary language of that's created, and that's being created, that has the same really intention that it had when that first drum beat came out. And we see it in the kids now, of when playing music that isn't necessarily the blues, but the blues is there, and or is not traditional blues. And we see it now in every city in America. And it's like a big pot that's steaming away, and the lid is rattling. And it won't be suppressed. And it's there. And coming from a white man, which I am, I think I make more of a statement about that. And people listen a little bit more closely. And I just get that feeling that the blues is in us all. And I want that to be recognized.
How do you see the genre moving through the future? I mean, I know that, you know, as you mentioned, we got a lot of these guys, these traditional guys that are passing away, or they're getting away from the business because of just their age and unable to do the work that they were doing. But you've got, you know, younger interested musicians that have embraced it. At least from my perspective, I've certainly seen that, and I would assume it would have been the same with you. But they're adding their own twist to it. Is that right?
Yeah, well, you've got Joe Bonamassa, who's basically playing a very, basically a traditional type of blues, but moving it more into rock and roll, more into the with the guitar playing. He's actually coming through strong. He's very big now in the rest of the world, and he's coming very strong in America now. Gary Clark Jr., another one who, when I spoke to Eric a year or so, he said he was going to be the one carrying the torch. But it's a question of knowing really what the torch is. The torch is that there was a creation made over the years of this sound that formed the blues, or this language that was the blues. And I think artists, young artists today, are obviously influenced by the B.B. Kings and the Muddy Waters, as artists were influenced by Muddy Waters 30 years ago, 40 years ago. But what happens, is what is happening, is younger people are going forward saying, look, this is my interpretation. And I don't think there's any one artist out there, or one band, or one player that is actually going to be so responsible of carrying the torch. I believe it will go in the same way as it's gone, where other people, or not necessarily those people that we know today, but also other people will come forward and create what we will refer to as blues-orientated music. And I don't know. It depends on, we see lots of things happening because of inventions of equipment and the internet and whatever. But when it comes down to it, everything seems to get back to the same thing. It's like guitar playing is always been associated with the blues. The drumming has always been, the beat of the drum has always been associated with the blues. And I think we'll see different interpretations of that. And I hope we do, because it's expression. It's using the language again. And as we lose the B.B. Kings of this world, they left enough. They left enough information and enough reference for young people to go forward and create important music.
That's a very important distinction, as we hear of stories of artists that have passed away, and we're like, oh, you know, we hate to hear this, and it's like, oh, these guys are going away, but you have to remember they have all left the significant artists out there that have done this. I think of them as sort of like impressionistic artists. You know, they have taken their spin on what this genre is, and they have laid it out there, whether it appears traditional or even modern, but they leave these important artifacts behind. And you know, we've heard from other artists that have said, look, we're not even archaeologists per se. We take what we hear, we've built our own thing on this, but we're trying to show as much respect to it, but at the same time to make this style of music as important as it really deserves to be. And it's not like rock and roll, even though it came from it, or it's not like any other style of music that exists. It is purely as I don't know, the traditionalists would have you believe, or the purists, the blues purists, which they're a fun bunch, but these are the artists that are willing to really take that and kind of bend it, if you will, a little bit to their own styles to attract a newer audience each and every time. And I my hat's off to every one of these guys that are out there doing it.
Yeah.
The documentary Monochrome, Black, White, and Blue is available on Amazon Prime here in the U.S. It came out earlier. I guess it was earlier this week is when it debuted, and it's going to be up there for a while, from my understanding. Is that right, John?
Well, I hope so. As long as it's in demand, and I think it's to me, it's a very special personal accomplishment. I did it completely. No one commissioned me to do it, and I did it because I was inspired to do it because of the information and the experiences that I had in the South. And I obviously picked up a lot of strains of that of those impressions in other parts of America. And I just suddenly saw this is all happening again. And we need to basically document it. And if you watch all the series, you will see that the very thing that started years and years and years ago is apparent today in a different format, obviously. But it's oppression, and it's a racism, and it's very apparent, and it shouldn't be there. And music will take it away. But I just hope that whatever I've put into that makes a statement so people go, you know what? I didn't realize that. We should really start doing something about all of this. Because without going into politics, which we're forced to do today, there is so much to be done still to create a very loving nation and a very loving world with respect to racism and to try and find a way through all of this, because the blues originally created that movement, and it's still there, and we need to keep that movement going. So that's why it's such a personal thing to me, because having experienced things just a few months ago to a few years ago that shouldn't have happened and shouldn't take place, and we need to address this. And so therefore, this is my statement from an Englishman who's white and a great blues lover. I've done 50 years in the music business and rock and roll and blues and whatever. And a little bit of a swan song to say, come on, guys, we've got to get together now and get rid of this stupid nonsense. So that's why I made this. That's why it's there. And I think that everyone should look at this film and this series and just try and learn a little bit more.
I'm glad you said it like that, John, because what really struck me, part one which really doesn't, you know, you don't really delve a whole heck of a lot into the music end of it until a little bit later in, but just talking about the relationships of these people and our society then with you know, the differences between black people and white people and the horrific imagery that you had put in there that was just, it's very stark and it's very, and you're right, everybody needs to see this. And you don't even have to be a fan of the genre of music. You need to see this to understand what the I guess the early seeds of our society really had turned into. And you did such a great job with this, John. I hope you're very proud of it. You should be. You guys did such a wonderful job with it.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's through Q Media, and are you working on anything new? Are you going to take a break here for a bit, or are you in the middle of something new here, or what's your plan?
Well, we've just started doing the Chuck Berry documentary. And we're very proud of being chosen to do it. And we started about 2 months ago, and we're heading for the summer now to complete that. And then we're going to start looking at doing a biopic dramatized film on Chuck Berry. And we're all Chuck Berry'd out right now.
there's a lot there, but no, congratulations to you on this one, and good luck with the Chuck Berry project. I think that's going to be a lot of fun too.
Well, thank you very much, Rick.
John Berry, John Brewer here, and thank you so once again. You can find the show Monochrome, Black, White, and Blue. It's on Amazon Prime here in the U.S. Take the time to look forward to it. And listen, John, if there's anything we can do next time you're in the Memphis area, come look us up. We can help you out with a few things maybe.
Great. I'll take you up on that.
Please do. I know it's tough work, that's for sure. So there you go.
I know.
All right, on.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
The Broom Closet is your one-stop shop for all of your metaphysical supplies and gifts. We stock candles, herbs, gemstones, incense, salt lamps, and more. We also host monthly rituals and events for those looking to get together with like-minded people. And the Broom Closet is the only place you can get your cards read by me, Reverend Emily. I'm an ordained Wiccan minister and Reiki master. Book your next tarot reading and see what's in the cards for you. Discover conscious living and being connected to an awesome community. The Broom Closet Metaphysical Shop is located in downtown Memphis, or visit our online store at thebroomclosetmemphis.com. The Broom Closet, where magic begins.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode from Radioland with Rick Cheddar.
As I mentioned, I'm on the road earlier in this show. And I'm probably recording something now to get the whole production thing back together because, you know, travel and stuff. And I just got held up. But at any rate, we'll probably talk something and pull something out of our butts because that's kind of what we do. I may not even have a guest. I don't know. I have no idea what's going to happen. We'll figure it out on the next go-round of this program. You know there's going to be a song in there. And I'll just be prattling away in the front seat of a car driving back from Austin, Texas. So it's a 12-hour ride, but I don't think I'm going to give you a 12-hour show. But we'll see what we encounter along the way. Because, you know, when I get out into public, just the Lord knows, there's no telling what kinds of things I'm going to encounter. And who knows, with the thing recording, you'll be right there along with me. So, that's all coming up next time.
For previous episodes, go to radio-memphis.com. To download episodes to your mobile device, search the show in iTunes, player.fm, stitcher.com, Pocket Cast, or TuneIn. And now, here's more with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
And there you have it, our conversation with Mr. John Brewer from the UK. Yes, go see this thing, or just go to your television and take a look at it, or your device, or whatever, on Amazon Prime. Monochrome, Black, White, and Blues. It is it's very, very good. I sat down and watched all three episodes of it, and I was just fascinated by it. It's good stuff. It's especially if you like history, if you like stories about people and the remarkable things that people do. I think you'll find it incredibly enjoyable. So there you go. A little tip from the Rickster. How about that? Huh? How about some music? Yeah, we do that too. That was this. Let's get into it. These guys are friends of the radio station. They've been around a long time. They've been playing Memphis for forever. They have very different facets with their music. Sometimes they play a lot just kind of a straight ahead blues. Sometimes they play just a good rock type thing, or they get even to like metal, and they'll incorporate a harmonica in a metal track as well. And then they got something a little fun and progressive and groovy and just a flat out good time like this. This is Low Down Lover. It's from the RVs right here from Radioland. The RVs, Low Down Lover from Radioland. Yeah, buddy. You heard what's coming up next time on the program. By the way, go get the RVs record. RV, like a recreational vehicle. RVs, the RVs. Billy Gibson and the boys. And if you get a chance to see them live, I highly, highly, highly recommend it. And they're about due back into the studio again anytime soon anyway. So there. Yes. Okay. So yeah, you heard what's coming up next time on the program. I'm going to go. I got to get out of here. I got things I got to get into. So until next time, please take care of yourselves, take care of one another, and for God's sake, stop shooting each other. All right. Y'all be sweet. I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been from Radioland.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. All music performed during this episode was used by permission. No part of this program can be rebroadcast or used in any other way except by written consent. For bookings and other inquiries, you can write the show by sending an email to radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. For more, go to radio-memphis.com.